In a scene in a movie, listless and despondent, that his mother takes him to the doctor. It's all because of something he's read. He has learned that the universe is expanding. He says the universe is everything, and if it's expanding, someday it will break apart, and that would be the end of everything. His mother has more immediate concerns. She protests to the doctor he stopped doing his homework. And her child says, "What's the point?" As with evil, which I talked about last week, I think that with questions of meaning, a certain kind of theology has dominated Western thinking and gotten us into habits of mind that we continue even if we have abandoned that theology. Meaning is something we crave. It's something we need. But we may struggle to know what meaning even means. In the theology that has done the most to shape our modern world, meaning came from an externally created plan, something outside of us, an intention, a purpose endowed by a creator. Religious naturalism, which is prevalent in Unitarian Universalism among theists, atheists, agnostics, doesn't provide that kind of meaning. Nature is wondrous and it is abundantly creative, but it does not, as far as we can detect, have a plan. It does not gaze into the future and create us accordingly. Things emerge. They unfold, they develop, including our planet and the living things upon it and us human beings. The universe may well be entirely indifferent to us, and yet we cry out for meaning. And so we need another way of thinking about meaning. One thing is abundantly clear. We need meaning as much and in much the same way that we need to take in oxygen and expel carbon dioxide. The psychologist Viktor Frankl observed this when he himself was trying to survive the four concentration camps in which he was incarcerated between 1942 and 1945. The Nazis attacked the inmates with numerous deadly weapons, with starvation, hard labor, shooting, gassing, rampant disease, torturous cold, among others. Now, in such circumstances, meaning alone would not sustain somebody. And yet, as Frankl fought to survive and to help others survive, he noted that, and these are his words, other things being equal, those most apt to survive the camps were those oriented toward the future, toward a task or a person waiting for them in the future, toward a meaning to be fulfilled by them in the future. The song we've just sung by the wonderful Unitarian Universalist composer, you say Maria Barnwell, I always have to brag that she's a UU, also talks about how we get our meaning from the past. That feels like a whole other sermon, so one day. But Frankl looked from that place to what kind of meaning can still be fulfilled by me, by other people in this terrible situation. And so when freed from the camps, but bereft of his parents, brother, wife, he and one sister were the only survivors in their family, Frankl returned to his profession and began to rebuild a life. And he turned his psychological practice and his research to the psychological importance of meaning. Since then, his anecdotal observations have been supported by numerous studies. There are psychological inventories one can take of purpose in life and meaning in life, which don't define them, but ask the person to assess for themselves whether they feel that their life has meaning and purpose, and or whether they seek meaning and purpose. Both the sense that life is meaningful and the search for meaning seem to be important to our well-being. They make a significant difference, for example, in whether somebody thrives in retirement or suffers after leaving the workforce. They make a significant difference in whether somebody is happy in their job. They are significant predictors of the physical and mental health and the life expectancy of seniors in assisted living. Among the developmental assets listed in Project Cornerstone, Palo Alto's evidence-based program for the well-being of teenagers, is a sense of purpose. We are less likely to die by suicide, less likely to suffer cardiovascular disease, less likely to develop Alzheimer's if we have a strong sense of purpose. And even as we need other things to live, a sense of purpose can help make up for their lack. One of the things that we need, along with food and water and shelter and medical care, is for most of us some kind of freedom. But when Frankl was back working in Austria, he received a letter from a prisoner, someone who had been convicted of a crime and was serving a long sentence, who wrote to him of how the search for meaning had changed his life. Even though he was in a tiny cell, he had never been happier. One study has even shown that in white US Americans, a lack of purpose correlates strongly with racism and xenophobia, and that those who have an experience that bolsters their sense of meaning and purpose are subsequently more open to living among people unlike them. People of different ethnicities, people of other races. They're less prejudiced in their attitudes. Can it be that those who organize their lives around the rejection of others, who fear being replaced and become terrorists, such as the one who killed 50 people in the mosques in New Zealand on Friday, can it be that they are starving for meaning? If so, that's a warning to us to remember that meaning itself is not necessarily good nor bad. But if we need it, as these many studies indicate that we do, perhaps if we don't develop it, like people starve for nutritious food, we will wolf down whatever gives us a sense of purpose, even if it's junk food, even if it's poison. And violence and bigotry may fill in for better meanings. I've been using meaning and purpose here more or less interchangeably, so it's time for a clarification. Purpose suggests a future orientation. That purpose might come from our Creator, or if we think that our Creator was blind, unthinking nature, then it can come from what we plan to do with our abilities, with our time. It may be that circumstances come upon us, inevitably they do, that we don't ask for, and we may say, well, they didn't have a purpose, these hurtful, painful things that come into our lives, but I will forge a purpose out of what I do now from this point. This is what Frankl speaks of when he says that those who had someone or something in the future to live for were more likely to survive the camps. In that place where the past had been destroyed and the present was saturated with suffering and struggle, a spark of the possibilities of the future, that there was meaning awaiting there, could tie someone more firmly to life. So that's purpose with its future orientation. And there's another meaning to meaning as well, that of significance. A work of literature, a work of art, carries meaning. We know this. And we know that we don't need to know the creator's intention in order to find that meaning, that is, to make meaning. Oftentimes we have no idea. We see a painting hanging on a wall that is meaningful to us, although we have no way of talking to the long-dead painter to find out what they meant. To interpret, we perceive, And to incorporate the meanings we create in our, into ourselves, we need just those things in our own being. So maybe turning from paintings and books and works of music to ourselves, that could help us to answer the question, do we have an ultimate purpose? Is there a significance given to us? What does ultimate even mean? Here we are with our mayfly lives on a planet that Douglas Adams wrote is found in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy. Even that planet and its sun, even our galaxy, have brief lives when viewed from the point of view of the universe. But within our scope, the only time that we have, the only materials with which we can create, we value purpose, we need purpose, and it appears we make purpose. As people say all the time in phrases we know, something to live for, someone who needs me, a way to make a difference. These sources of meaning and purpose are found close to home, not out in some ultimate time or distance. If we wake in the morning intending to teach, to heal, to build, to imagine, to create, to help, that, it appears, is enough. It is enough for us. And so it's no wonder that seniors in institutional settings are happier and healthier if they have a bird to feed, or even just a plant to take care of. And does it matter that one day the bird and the plant and the person and the building and the planet will be gone? It appears not, as many wise mortal inhabitants of Earth have reminded us, here and now we are alive. So where does our meaning come from? One of the new atheists, I think it was Richard Dawkins, but I couldn't track down the quote, scoffed at religious liberals, people like us who read the Bible metaphorically. I meet lots of UUs who read the Bible seriously. It's a very important part of our sources, both individually and collectively, but I've never met one who read it literally. He says, it was written to explain reality. It was meant literally as a factual account of what happened. And now here we are saying, oh, it's just metaphors. He suggests this is a dodge. We religious liberals, we're moving the goalposts, we're changing the rules, we're trying to have it both ways. Now, setting aside that very questionable assertion about the original purpose of the stories of the Bible, even I'll just accept that assertion for the sake of argument. You know, the revision and reinterpretation at which he scoffs are exactly how meaning works. This is what we do. We keep creating meanings. As Neil deGrasse Tyson says, the problem is that when you look for things in life like love, meaning, motivation, it implies they're sitting behind a tree or under a rock. The most successful people in life recognize that in life they create their own love. They manufacture their own meaning. They generate their own motivation. We manufacture our own meaning. That doesn't make it fake. Quite the contrary, things don't have a meaning in and of themselves, only in relation to minds that interpret and hearts that search. And lives that proceed day to day, not by bread alone, but by that most precious food for the soul, purpose and meaning. So here's a little experiment to show what I mean. The quote that I gave at the very beginning of the sermon about the boy for whom life has lost meaning because the universe will eventually expand to the point of breaking apart, I didn't tell you who wrote it. So will the meaning change if I do? Let's see. It is from the opening scene of Annie Hall by Woody Allen. You might have noticed I don't quote Woody Allen from the pulpit. I don't actively boycott him, but I just don't quote him too much anymore. It's not that his words no longer have any wisdom either. Our words live outside our lives. And heaven knows I quote lots of people whose lives are not exemplary. Otherwise, the store of human wisdom would be very paltry. And yet, when I tell you that, it changes something about the meaning, doesn't it? What he has made of his life adds layers of meaning to his words. Well, this goes both ways. We can interpret the stories that are told to us in whatever way we want, whatever way we need to, not erasing the contexts in which they have been interpreted before, but adding new ones, adding our own. So there's a character in Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf who reflects it might be possible that the world itself is without meaning. Well, yeah, worlds don't have meaning unless they're created by beings that have intention. But minds that reflect upon them, they imbue the world with meaning. Last fall, when I was preparing a session of the adult religious education program, Building Your Own Theology, specifically on meaning and purpose, a former member of the congregation, you may know, Kim Cooper, said, "The best t-shirt slogan I ever saw was, 'The meaning of life is to give life meaning.'" I loved how circular it is, because, you know, answers about meaning tend to be like the traditional one, that the reason that we are here is to give glory to God, our Creator. That's kind of circular. I mean, meaning is not ultimate, because no answer is ultimate. We can always ask more questions. So let's try that one. I mean, what is the purpose for which humans were created? To give glory to their Creator. Why? Because their Creator requires it. Why? Any assertion of meaning can get stuck in this cul-de-sac. What is your purpose? Somebody might ask you, and you say, to care for others. Why does that give you purpose? Well, because other people's lives matter. Why do they matter? I mean, one can always ask, but why, one more time, as anyone who has spent time with a four-year-old can attest. The poet Walt Whitman asked these questions and focused here on this life. He left us with a beautiful answer. Oh me, oh life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, of myself forever reproaching myself for who more foolish than I, and who more faithless. The question, oh me, so sad, recurring, what good amid these? Oh me, oh life. Answer. That you are here, that life exists, and identity, that the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. Let us now give and receive the offering that supports the work of this congregation. If you missed a chance last week to give to our justice partner, Heart and Home, you can give to them by going to the Action Council table right out there with the bright yellow tablecloth after the service. Today, what we collect supports this congregation directly. If you're visiting us for the first time, please, you're our guest. Let the basket pass you by with a clear conscience.